Hey guys, real quick before we jump into this next episode, I want to discuss something with you. I made a decision a couple of years ago not to bombard this podcast with tons of ads or just bombard you with sponsorship. Nothing would drive me more crazy when listening to other podcasts when the first 5 minutes were nothing but ads. So I worked hard not to do that to you. I try to keep the ads to a minimum and keep the podcast as streamlined as possible. So do me a favor. Go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. Buy yourself a bag. Up your shooting game. You're going to thank me. And if you're not a rifle hunter, go buy yourself a glassing pad. Your butt is going to thank me after spending hours behind the glass. They're awesome. If you use promo code John Stallone, all one word, you'll save 20%. And lastly, please, I know you heard me say it, iTunes, Podbean, go leave us a review. I need the feedback. The ratings help me reach more people, and it helps me keep this free. So do me a favor, check out Phoenix Shooting Bags, and go leave us a review. Thank you. Let's roll into this next episode.
This week we're gonna talk to the guys behind Go Wild, the Go Wild app. It's a social media platform basically for hunters, or not just hunters, but outdoorsmen and women. Sorry, girls. I like it because one of the things that I've been preaching is that the fact that we put stuff on these social media platforms and we post these pictures of, you know, trophy shots or whatever, and anti-hunters are using that stuff against us. And it's very easy for them to, you know, persuade the middle ground using propaganda, and unfortunately they're using our content to do it. So this is an application that's specifically just for our niche, and the chances of somebody, I mean, not that they can't, you know, go on there and make a profile and, you know, they really got to be trolling for that, but I think it's kind of a neat thing. It's just, you know, a safer place for us to share our passion. What's going on, Brad?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. I just got back from going to check a water hole that I'm thinking about doing a repair on. Working with Arizona Mule Deer Organization, and we're putting on a raffle right now to win a hunt with my outfitting services, Days in the Wild, and hunt with me and my guys, basically 5-day deer hunt. And it's the winner's choice to either go, if they already have a rifle tag, if they drew a rifle tag, we'll take them on their rifle hunt. Or if they want to go during the archery seasons, there's three different archery seasons, and we're going to. So it's kind of a neat gig, and the money's going to go to repairing these water holes and whatnot. So I'm excited about it.
That's awesome, man.
So, so why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself, and then let's talk about how Go Wild came about.
Yeah, you gave a little bit of an intro, but I'll do personal background and then intro the app kind of from my point of view. So I grew up in southeastern Kentucky, and grew up, you know, outside. Grew up doing some hunting, a lot of fishing with my dad, a lot of off-roading, a lot of just playing outside, you know, southeastern Kentucky. Kentucky doesn't have a lot of public land, but where I lived, you know, in Bell County, Kentucky, is where a good portion of Kentucky's public land kind of starts, and then it runs northeast from there. It's right in the heart of the Cumberland Gap. So where I grew up, I was just over the mountain from Tennessee and 5-minute drive from Virginia. So, you know, grew up playing in the woods, and I went off to college and really, you know, as a lot of people do, kind of got away from it, away from the hunting side, at least, anyways, and the shooting, and you know, even fishing. I just got focusing on building a career and making friends, and you know, doing what you do in college, and then got out of college, got into my professional life, and you start to get like reminiscent, you know, you start to want to get back to your roots a little bit. So it kind of started with me and my sister going squirrel hunting, and then, you know, started, I had mostly small game hunted, and I got into the idea of deer hunting, and I had somebody else taking me. And when I wasn't able to go with them anymore, I realized that I was not really a good deer hunter. I was just hunting with a good deer hunter. So I start this pursuit of trying to learn and trying to teach myself. And I found out the internet, while it's 2016 at the time, it was not a very easy place to learn how to hunt. You know, there's a lot of antiquated forums. No one was really catering to the geolocation of it all. And, you know, I would be looking up how to hunt whitetail, and I kept ending up in mule deer forums, and which is totally irrelevant to how we hunt in Kentucky. You know, right. I hear so many guys out west, they're like, man, you should just try spot and stalk. I'm like, yeah, you come out here and try that in the leaves that we have to deal with in November. It's like, it's a totally different environment. So I was really frustrated, and it kind of shocked me. I was in advertising. I've done hundreds of projects for branding and websites, and was working at a pretty savvy digital agency. And I'm looking at all the technology that's out there for hunters and anglers, and I'm like, really, this is it? And so I decided to do it ourselves. So I formed a team, and we didn't really even know what we were going to build. We sat down literally in my basement over some pizza and said, what do we want to do? What are we going to build? Like, what do we want it to be, and what do we want it to not be? And we decided, you know, a lot of people, when they first hear about this, they start to think of a mapping app, a scouting app, and there's been a ton of those, and a lot of them have done really well and are really well thought out and designed, and a ton of resources has gone into that. You know, OnX is the best example of that I can think of. And we knew we didn't want to do that. A, there were other people that were doing it well, and B, that's a platform that you're only going to use semi-seasonally, right? You're going to use it when you're prepping for your hunting trip, and you're going to use it in the hunting season. But most people, you know, a hunting season is a few days a year. It's a weekend or maybe up to a week. But most people aren't as hardcore and aren't going to spend, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks hunting. And so we wanted to build a product that people could use throughout the year and learn from and get enjoyment out of. And we started talking about the social components and the campfire storytelling aspect of it. You know, you think of really being a human developed around a campfire. You know, we celebrated our hunts. That's where language was developed, and that's where families fellowshiped. So we wanted to build a digital campfire for whatever it is you like to do. So we built a platform that focuses on the content first. So if you want to learn about deer hunting, you can go right into the deer hunting channel, and you can post into that, and you don't need 15,000 followers to get reach. You know, you're going to hit everybody that's in that channel, and that you can start to get answers really quickly. You know, I posted a post this morning, and I think it's already got closing in on 15 or 20 comments on it, and I don't even have as many followers on my Go Wild account as I do my Instagram. But right. When I post the same thing on my Instagram account, and it might get more likes because that's what Instagram is driven to do, is to generate likes, which I think are meaningless, but it has no comments on it yet as of this morning. You know, it's a much more, it's like a kindling. You know, you think of a thought starter, or it's a catalyst for conversation. That's how people typically use Go Wild. An example of that for turkey season, I saw a lot of newbies coming out and saying, hey, I've never turkey hunted before. It's been windy all day today. I'm going on my first hunt tomorrow, and it's been kind of rainy. What do you guys recommend? How do I approach this? What techniques should I use? How should I approach calling? And that person gets to wake up to 15 to 20 tips from people who didn't follow them, didn't know who they were, but they were following turkey hunting and can help. So that's where it started. And to kind of button up my intro to Go Wild here, it started as a forum, and we've added in activity tracking. So now when you go out on a hunt, you can actually log your progress and track your mileage. You can track the elevation change. We're tracking the photos you take along the way, and it pulls it together all in an anonymized map. We're not, again, not showing location. It's more of your story and how that story evolved. So you can see the photos you took along the way. Like your scouting trip this morning, you could see those photos in your hike out. You could have taken some photos along the way, but you'll see your elevation change, total mileage. And that's really where we're moving full force into. We've rolled this out to about a dozen different activities now. We've got it for fishing. We're adding in rock climbing right now, and it's going to continue to expand throughout the outdoors. You kind of said it a second ago, but we don't really see it as a hunting app. It's more of an outdoor enthusiast app. Whatever you want to do in the outdoors, even foraging, you can log time for foraging and go out.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I look at it as like a kind of like a safe place. Like a haven. I don't feel like I'm going to get judged. I haven't played with it a whole bunch yet. I honestly just got introduced to it maybe a month and a half ago. I mean, I had heard of it and I had seen you on Instagram. But I loathe social media right now. I've gotten so burnt out and hate what it's kind of done to society.
Me too, man. I just deleted my Facebook account.
That's why. I need to. And I, right now it's like still, it's like a necessary evil for me. Cause, you know, unless you're paying lots of money to drive things nowadays, the only way to get any kind of exposure with anything is through your social media. And I've spent a long time building all that stuff up and it's hard for me to let it go. But believe me, I've thought of committing social media suicide many, many times.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I deleted my personal Facebook account about 7 months ago. We still have a business account for the app, but it doesn't really get any reach. I mean, it's pretty insignificant, even though we got 12,000 fans on there. And we got, I don't know, it's like close to 60,000 on our Instagram account. And even just yesterday, one of our ambassadors who's closing in on 100,000, she was asking us, you know, are you guys seeing limited reach? And I do think it's just becoming more and more challenging. I mean, it makes sense, man. Here's the deal. Look at how many people are using those platforms, and you're competing for eyeballs with the amount of content that's out there. Instagram's own stats say that 70% of the content goes unseen.
Think
about that. And then, like, I've seen some stats that up to 30% of comments are bots. So you have this huge volume of content that goes unseen. You have this huge part of engagement that's a smokescreen. Mm-hmm. So how do you get away from that? And you also you've hit twice now. Part of the reason we started the platform was recognizing all the way back in 2016 what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. And if we got anything right, it was realizing that the bullying was just going to be the precursor to where this was going. At that time, Instagram hadn't specifically started deleting posts. They hadn't necessarily called out hunting as violence in their terms as they do now. And now we've seen this flip to where you can't advertise a gun on Instagram. You can't advertise a bow, knives. You can get your even the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation just got dinged in their advertisements. And you know, they had the clout as an organization to overturn this and get it done for now. But we'll see what happens as they scale. But even they got dinged just for having an ad that showed hunting in it. It wasn't advertising a firearm. But, you know, we kind of thought that's where it was going to head. It did that, and it's doubling down all the time. I'm talking to more and more people who – actually, a guy literally just last night messaged me who's not an influencer. He's just a regular guy, and he said, man, I've been looking for somewhere else to go because I'm tired of my stuff getting getting flagged and getting deleted and censored. And, you know, as things kind of move to cities, you think of, like, the evolution of society – more and more people are living in cities. That means more and more people are not interacting with wildlife and are not seeing it for what it is. So you have these moderators that work at these organizations like a Facebook or an Instagram. And where do you think they're based? They're based in the valley. They're not that, you know, their experience with wildlife is the pigeons on the street. They're not familiar with, predator control. They don't understand conservation and how hunters and firearm enthusiasts are the ones paying for that. They don't have any concept of all that. And, you know, I think part of our duty, you mentioned, is to just tell that story in a way that can be compelling to them. So I think part of what Go Wild opens up an opportunity to do is you can tell your holistic story on our platform. You can share those trophy photos and people get it. Just like they did when it was on your coffee table book back, you know, 20 years ago, you had a coffee table album that was all of your deer that you'd shot in your whole life. And nobody would have thought that was weird. But now, you know, if your Instagram account is nothing but dead animals, people who aren't exposed to that might think it's weird, right? Like they're going to think that's strange. And it is strange to them. Like they're not exposed to that in the same way. So what Go Wild offers is a chance to share that same content in a place where it has the context that it needs. And then we encourage people through our system even, you know, we encourage people to log their scouting time and to talk about their food. We have functionality for your recipes. And what we hope this does is to show content creators, just our general members, everyday members, hey, your story has – you have a good story throughout the year too. It's not just that trophy photo. Like share this type of content. We hope that spreads outwards to an Instagram. If you look at my personal Instagram account, you're going to see mostly food. I'll post a hunting shot every now and then. And there might be some, you know, coincidentally a dead animal in the side, off to the side, or not in the foreground necessarily. Like it might be a detail shot. But most of what I'm creating is showing people the food and the recreation side. And that's my personal, you know, if I were to think of like my guideline and my beacon, that's how I handle it. You know, some people, Jeremiah Dowdy, who on Instagram is from Field to Plate, I look at how he shares content and he's sharing the raw, real story, and he's got a lot of stuff that gets censored and deleted, but he's talking about the meat aspect of it. And I think he does a really good job of different type of content than I do, but it's not a trophy. He's not at all, you know, just hitting the trophy. I see so many hunters, their whole feed is just trophies, and I think if you're telling that one part of the story, you can't get mad at other people when that's the only part of the story they're talking about either.
Right, right. Yeah, no, it's tough because the mindset when we first got, and I even if you look at TV shows, hunting TV shows, it went from like, oh, if you don't have the kill shot, you can't even make a TV show.
Yeah.
And now it's like, they don't want to see kill shots. They just want to see, you know, the beautiful slow motions and you know, it's like, so there's been an evolution in a very short amount of time, and there's a lot of people, even myself, that are kind of stuck in this, like, you know, it's like wherever you got in, that's usually what you're doing, you know, like, and you continue to do that, if that makes sense. Like, you know, if you got in the phase where I don't know, trophy shots were the, you know, or bloody shots were the thing, you know, oh, you want to see how, show how gruesome your, how awesome your broadhead works, you know, or whatever, that kind of stuff. Those are the stuff that, you know, that you got used to doing that. So you usually kind of, that's kind of there, and it carries forward because, I think a lot of that
depends too on your audience though. Have you been to like the Badlands Film Festival at ATA?
I have.
Yeah, so it's like that. The content you're going to see there is very much like what you're talking about. People want to see a little bit more of the archery side of things and those shots. Like, but that content, a lot of what you're going to see at Badlands, you wouldn't necessarily want to put out there for the rest of the world out of context, right? Like, it's a lot of it is where you're sharing it with. And I think if people just slow down and think about just that portion of it, you know, you would probably come to some different conclusions. A lot of it, social media, and I like what you said. I hadn't thought about it that way. Of like, it's a lot of it is kind of like when you started learning and what you've been exposed to, because a lot of the people that are sharing that typically, like I think of like the whitetail in the back of the truck with beer cans. Like,
yeah.
A lot of people have grown up with that picture and that trophy moment because they hauled it back late at night or they drove a truck out on a farm and that's where they first got their chance to get a shot with their deer. But over time, that particular picture is getting more and more criticized because it looks disrespectful to the animal, to the outside. You know, I understand that scenario and I understand like how deer camp works, and I can get that. And I'm not personally offended by it, but I don't personally like that photo either at the same time, because I you just have to think about like what happens when it gets out of my circle. And that's what social media in general has opened wide up. And really the digital age, man, you look at the and you might be more familiar with this been out west, but the Idaho commissioner last year who got into heaps of trouble over those baboons sent in an email. But dude, it's so easy in the digital age. You don't have to like make photocopies and find somebody's mailing address and send it. It would have been a lot more work to share that with somebody before if he had sent that. Now it's literally forwarding it to two people, and maybe one of them, you know, all of a sudden you're on CNN. Like, I always kind of think through, like, part of your content moderation policy, like, for yourself can be like, how fast could this get put on CNN's front page and misunderstood? Look at all of these, and a lot of times it's women, because they seem to be judged differently in the media's eyes. But, you know, a woman standing next to a giraffe is going to flare people up. Like, that's just going to happen over and over. I just did a great podcast with Tom Opry, who, are you familiar with Tom, filmmaker?
Yeah, I know the name, but I don't know his work or him.
He's an interesting guy, man. He's really outspoken, and he and I were talking about this, and his wife's really knowledgeable on the subject too of African hunting. And, you know, a good guideline per Tom is, you know, if it's an African zoo animal, you probably shouldn't be posting a trophy photo of it. It's going to get people irritated. My version of that is, if it's on your kids' PJs, there's a good chance it's going to get somebody flared up, you know.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, it's a hard thing to want to police yourself, you know.
Yeah.
And then the flip side of it is a lot of guys out there, like, you know, with a mindset like, why should I have to, you know, I'm not doing anything wrong. Why should I have to, you know, change my way? You know, they're the pussies or whatever. I hear them called the snowflakes out there. The snowflakes can't, you know, deal with it and blah, blah, blah. And I get that standpoint too, you know.
I do too, but here's the thing, man. You get enough snowflakes together, and yes, you're going to have a snowball, then it's going to turn into an avalanche. Here's the situation we're facing. It's we're in a time right now when and you probably know this well, and you probably talked about it on your show. But, you know, 30% of hunters are baby boomers, and within the next 8 to 10 years, they're going to age out of hunting. And unless we get some more people in, we're about to lose some political clout. And, you know, when we lose 30% of our, you know, 11.5 million hunters, which is what it was in 2016. There's some rumors. I haven't seen the data specifically. I keep hearing that 2018 might have had a bump, but either way, over a 20-year there's a 20-year pattern that we're losing hunters. So when the baby boomers age out, we're going to lose a lot of political clout. And all of a sudden, that 5 to 10% of snowflakes, if you want to use that terminology, that don't like hunting, and most of America doesn't care. But all of a sudden, man, you've seen it on social media. A few noisy people can make a difference, and especially in the social media age, politicians cower to a noise. You know, it doesn't take a lot of people. So that's why you got to think about this. It doesn't matter if it's legal to post, if it's your right to post. You have to think about, you know, hunting is not a right. It can be taken away legally. So that's, to me, like, that's the best argument against that mentality. Is, you know, look at, there's scenarios, and I probably shouldn't even say this, but I mean, I've heard of, somebody was telling me about in Michigan, like, the reason their dove season doesn't exist is because of a political flare up, a misunderstanding, which hunting wasn't represented very well, and it pissed off the wrong politician, and they went to town and they banned dove hunting. And a lot of times, you know, go to the Sportsman's Alliance website, and you can just look through tons of examples in which, you know, some group, the Humane Society of the United States, gets flared up from an instance, and all of a sudden they've got half a million signatures trying to ban something. It doesn't matter that, you know, 80% of them are coming from overseas. All that matters is a politician sees that half a million people want to do something. So to me, like, if you think about it that way, it starts to put a little bit more context into it. But that said, I run a social media app. We hear that all the time. Like, I shouldn't have to give in to this. But I think once people start to slow down and think about the consequences of that, it will start to resonate on, you know, how this can impact you directly.
I think it's all of our duty right now to really start work. Let me back up a little bit. And I listeners of my podcast have heard me say it several times now, but the other side has been doing an excellent job of using propaganda, infiltrating the mainstream media, not just social media, but mainstream media for years and years and years. And they use tactics, which I call, you know, this is basically like rubbernecking. You know, what do you do when you see a car accident on the side of the road? You slow down and you look, you know. So if you put something outlandish out, you're going to get eyes to look. And it's very easy to persuade people that are in the middle ground that are not educated on how things work to say, oh, yeah, I'm with you. You know, that's terrible. Deer hunting is terrible or whatever. So it's our duty to really start putting our best foot forward and showing the best side of what we do and taking time and educating people in the middle ground. You're not going to change the hearts and minds of the antis. It's not going to happen. Okay. They're just as passionate, if not more passionate than you are about what they do and as you are about what you do. So that the two bookends are not going to come together. You got to get everybody else in between. And it's not necessarily turning these people into hunters. It's more just letting them know, hey, this is what hunting does. You know, this is, let me show you why I'm passionate about it. Invite them over for a meal. Whatever. That kind of stuff. You know, talking at the water cooler at work and getting people to understand that, okay, like for instance, today I went to go check a water hole that is going, when this raffle goes through and we have the money for it, we're going to go fix it and so on and so forth. There's going to be, you know, an exponential amount of benefit. It's not just for the deer, it's for all these other animals. And for the, you know, in 5 years, if five deer get shot off that water hole, how many more deer were saved because there was water there for them to drink? You know,
and like, other species too, you know.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Habitat management, you know, the National Wild Turkey Federation has done wonders for all kinds of birds. It's not, all kinds of other animals too. It's not just turkeys that they're saving. And you can apply that out to Ducks Unlimited. I mean, any of these conservation groups are doing wonders for different species other than their focus.
But my point is that the middle ground doesn't know this. They don't understand it.
Right.
All they see is what you're putting out, and it's a grip and grin photo, and all they're seeing and hearing is what the other side is saying about you and the shit that they're spinning. And I don't know if you saw this or not, but I posted a while back, like 2 weeks ago, there was a guy who walked outside to go shoot his archery target. He had a Glendale buck that was laying on the ground and he was going to go shooting. And there was a fawn sleeping next to it. And he put the little story up there. He's like, I went out, I didn't want to bother it, so I backed up. And then about an hour later, the mom came back and she got her, and they went off into the woods. And then some snowflake got a hold of that photo, changed the narrative to it, and said, oh, look at this poor fawn who thinks this deer is, you know, this target is its mother. When did we lose our way, you know? And so if you can imagine, that guy had probably, let's just say arbitrary numbers, he had 100 likes and, you know, 5 or 6 comments. Hers had like 22,000 likes and like 800 or 900 comments, you know? And it was like, man, you know?
Yeah.
You see how easy that, very innocent and
yeah, you see it all the time, man. Like I see you got some fur behind you there. That's such an interesting one too. It's really easy for me to say, hey, you don't you wish animals didn't suffer it as much? Don't you think we should use faux furs because then nothing has to die? That sounds really appealing as a sales pitch to somebody that's neutral, right? You're like, you know what? Yeah, animals shouldn't die so that I can have clothing. All right, here's the flip of this though. Let me approach this from how I see it. Hey, what if we had a renewable resource that you could use over and over again totally sustainable. And when you're done with the item, the clothing, it's biodegradable. It's natural. It's going to go back into the environment. Wouldn't you rather use that? It's like, yeah, that sounds really good. That's something we should do. And then I say, yeah. And the alternative to this is we use, oils to make synthetics that are never going to be biodegradable. And when you're done with it, it's got to go into a landfill. It's going to be around for forever. Doesn't that sound awful? It's like, that's the same story. Like, that's exactly the same situation of what's going on, but you can pitch it two different ways and they both sound really compelling to a neutral party. So that's where you're exactly right. I call them fringe people. You've got people that, you know, my buddy on Instagram was posting the other day about a 20-mile hike he did in Colorado on a vacation. And I was like, hey, man, we just stick a bow in your hands and you can come back with food. Like, you're already doing the work. And guys like him, and actually, he even said, he's like, you know, I'm not opposed to it. Right now, it just intimidates me a little bit. I think it might bother me, which is pretty much like where everybody's going to stand. Like, that's the entry point to say, hey, what if you came with me just to see if you like it? You know, you could take that route. And a lot of the people who are already doing stuff outside, whether it's camping or even anglers, anglers are great to convert to hunters. Oh, yeah. And there's three or four times as many of them as hunters too, by the way. Maybe as many as six times, depending on which study you see. But, you know, these fringe people are the ones that you should be focused on converting. They're the easy one. They already get the value of the outdoor experience. They already get the value of recreation. They're already out there. You just literally have to teach them how to pursue the animals. And to me, it's a much easier win. And then when it comes to the antis, you know, just don't engage with that in a hateful way. Constantly hit them with the facts and approach it in a, honestly, you think of it as a professional manner, and then all of a sudden, you know, you take emotion out of it, and they really don't have a lot to stand on. That's like the fur debate. If you lay that out as simply as I just did, and the fact that even like coyotes in a lot of areas are overpopulated, like you can start to get into those debates to where there's literally no win for them other than emotional things to stand on. And that's pretty much where it all falls, and that's where it all fuels too.
Right. Exactly. The science is behind us, and that's part of the problem is that in the past we've always done a really good job of talking science to scientific people, but that if you don't relate it to the public, they don't understand it. It's very easy to be persuaded by a Hughes's commercial of the poor animals and this and that, and you know, like they use emotion and not logic and all this other stuff. And it's like, it's so easy to be, taken in by that and take it as gospel, you know, and not really look to see what the real truth is, you know, what's the science behind what's going on here.
Well, the opposition to hunting has done a really great job at employing advertising agencies.
Oh, yeah.
Hunters have done a great job at employing the state agencies and the biologists that have all the science on our side and understand the population. But what we are terrible at is the advertising side of it. I mean, like even these efforts to recruit new hunters, a lot of them it focuses on like mentorship, and it sounds like education, and it sounds like school. How many people want to sign up to go to school again, you know? But if you tell me like, hey, this is really fun and you can have food and it's great to cook and it's a family experience, now I'm a little more interested. You know, we've done a terrible job, in my opinion, of advertising hunting, and any advertisements that have come out of it that are typically driven by companies, and the companies have been, it's gotten into this. You kind of talked about like wherever you came into it is kind of what you understand. We've gone through this series of content creation where we focused on trophies, and we focused on, now it's all like the Western hunting and pushing yourself as far as you can go, and you got to have the best gear to do that. Well, all of a sudden, if I'm a new user, I'm looking at all these marketing campaigns by the corporate side, and it's like, dang, man, I got to spend $5,000 just to get into this and see if I like it. You know, it's like, what happened to like going squirrel hunting in your blue jeans and your flannel with a $150 shotgun? You know, we don't have that approach anymore, which is why small game, one reason I think small game has really declined. I mean, I think there are other things. I think hunting can actually, beyond anti-hunting and opposition, we're competing with Fortnite. We're competing with Netflix. We're competing with youth sports leagues. You know, when I grew up, kids, you might play football, you might play t-ball or minor league ball, and you played a league a year or maybe two. But now, like my 5-year-old nephews play double headers twice a day in multiple sports. You know, think even with change our family structure and all that's playing into this stuff. There's no like one thing you can circle around like, oh, that, if we can just fix that, that's what's wrong with hunting.
Right.
We've had a cultural shift, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think one of the things, and I've mentioned this again on the podcast a couple of times, but I think one of the things that we need to do as a group to help the transition in society right now is to implement something in the school system, you know, fifth grade, sixth grade, social studies or whatever, one chapter that educates kids in that age group once, so that, you know, they're basically starting to get to a point where they can understand things and really, you know, make some decisions on their own and whatnot. Something that educates them on the North American conservation model, you know, mm-hmm. To teaches Pittman Robinson and you know, Dingell Johnson and all these other ways that conservation happens, and that way, you know, not necessarily to convert them into hunters or anything like that. I mean, but so that in the future, when they are faced with propaganda from anti-hunting organizations, they can say, you know, I'm going to apply some critical thinking to this. I remember in school, I learned this. This seems like bullshit to me. You know, and I think that's, to me, is probably one of the most important and one of the biggest steps that we need to do as a group, as a community.
That's a really interesting point. I do think it's overlooked in our school systems. I mean, I definitely didn't come out with a local understanding of how my state handled wildlife management. You know, one group I love that concept. I don't know if I've heard a lot of people pitch what you just said. That would take a lot to get it done, but you could start doing that at the state, literally the local level, and then take it to your state. That's a big undertaking. One thing I've seen now with a nonprofit that we work with that I really love what she's doing is creating summer camp opportunities for kids to come out, because that's like when parents really need help of getting a kid involved. And Aaron Crooks with Raise Them Outdoors has built an organization, and she's doing small camps right now. You know, they've typically run between 50 to 80 kids. She just did her first camp that I think she had more than 100 kids show up and parents too. And it's an opportunity to go, and they spend 3 days. Like, they camp out, they learn to shoot, they learn to fish, they learn survival. And then she gets them pulled into her system, and then they stay onboarded. So they continue to get emails from her. They get challenges to get them outside. And she really focuses on teaching them conservation and the value. And it's hands-on, it's direct. And you think, like, okay, 100 kids at a time, how much is her reach? Well, she's only on year three, I think, might be 2.5 even. This is her first really like structured, organized year. She's going to touch 300 kids' lives this year of impacting them. And then a lot of them are interested in coming back, and then it helps. We're hoping next year to double the reach and get into some more states. And over time, that's going to be thousands of kids that she can reach. And right. I think, you know, local getting involved, there's other some individual states have great programs like this. Texas has a lot of really great programs like this. So I would encourage your listeners to really like look into either Raising My Doors. Aaron's doing camps this year she just did her biggest one she's ever done in Oregon. And that was the second year they've done that one. It'll definitely be back next year. She's got two coming up that people can sign up for in Texas, maybe one in Texas. And then there was a Virginia Beach one on the radar. I can't remember if that one's still happening or not. If it does, it might be smaller scale, but that's pretty diverse locations across the country, yeah. And she's looking to open up. So even if you're hearing this right now, reach out to me. I'm involved in the organization. I'm on the board, and go out as one of the lead sponsors for the organization. But if you want to reach out to either me or Aaron, if you're really excited about that, like, people can make a difference by helping her start up a new city. She really needs lead volunteers to get those off the ground, and she can help with getting the fundraising rolling. We're actually going to start. When's this podcast going to air?
I think probably by the end of July.
Okay, cool. So the timing's great. If you download Go Wild and get involved in the platform, you can help with Aaron's group. We're going to try to raise $10,000 for her through individual pledging. I've never done this before. We might end up raising $12. I have no idea. We'll see. But we're going to ask for people to volunteer to mentor people through hunting season. So right as hunting season kicks off in September, we're going to do a month-long campaign. It's kind of like a GoFundMe or a Kickstarter, but we're doing it with a company called Pledge It. And Pledge It is a cause-based sports funding organization. So they help, like, basketball players. They've worked with NBA, MLB, NHL players to raise for cause marketing. And I met them this year, and what these guys are doing is awesome for raising for important nonprofit causes. So we are basically asking people to spend time mentoring. So for every hour you spend mentoring, you can raise money for Raise Them Outdoors to help make a difference. So if you were going to spend 5 hours taking your buddy hunting this year, that's $500 you might raise for an organization for something you were going to do anyways. So this campaign is going to kick off in September. So if your group's, if this airs in July or August, whenever it is, check out Go Wild and stay involved in it, and you'll be able to find out how to help. And again, it's something, if you're already taking it, somebody new or somebody that's newer, it doesn't have to be the first time they hunt. Just get some friends and family to chip in even $1, $5, $10 for every hour you spend. All of a sudden, we can raise money for an organization that makes a difference. To me, like, these grassroots opportunities, you know, these organizations, there's a lot of impact coming from this right now. National Wild Turkey Federation has seen really the impact or results that, you know, a dozen good people can do. They've hired up around a dozen to 20 R3, which is the recruitment, retainment, and re-engagement of hunters. They've hired these people across the country, and they're seeing the impact directly from that already of just a couple people in each state that can really get out and recruit. So, you know, if you want to get involved in our campaign with Raise Them Outdoors and Pledge It, that's awesome. If you want to look into National Wild Turkey Federation or the Council for Hunting and Shooting Sports Foundation. It's a long acronym, man.
I just had the guys from NSSF on last week, and they're
who'd
actually.
You have?
I had Nick. What'd I have? I had
was Justin.
No, Cricruto. What's his last? Okay. What's his first name? And then. Yeah, we were talking, and we kept doing the same thing that you just did. It's a mouthful, man.
I have to think about it. but yeah, you know, thinking, looking at, like, what they're doing, find a group. Like, I always say, in supporting, if you're not a member, too, you know, hunters really like to thump their chest about their dollars that they spend. And oh, my hunting license is going back into the state, and that's true, and that's awesome. And you go beyond that, even if you're not a duck hunter, go buy your duck stamp too. It's one of the best ways to put your money to work. But if you want to really start to make an impact, give it to these organizations where 90, you know, they'll tell you what percentage is going back into the environment. I mean, it's amazing how good they are at functioning. Becky Humphreys I talk about NWTF more because I'm more familiar with them. We're a partner of theirs. We work pretty closely with them, but these are really smart people that are doing a lot of great work. I mean, these organizations have not single-handedly, but have been a huge player in restoring all of these different populations. And now they, Becky likes to say that they've done a great job with the, bringing the endangered turkey back. Now they're focused on the next endangered species, which is the hunter. So pick one of these organizations or pick five if you have the means and get involved. Another one that we work with is the Houston Safari Club Foundation. And you know, if it's Dallas, if it's Safari Club, all of these groups are operating in a way that, you know, you're going to spend $35 at a minimum. you're gonna put some money back into the system through them because they have the orchestration and the structure to make that money work. And then you get a great magazine a couple times a year. You might get some free swag if you join Sportsman's Alliance. You get a free hat or a knife. You know, you're not getting nothing out of this, and it's $35, man. Think about it. That's like, for me, that's like two Chipotle burritos. You know, it's like I kind of think of things like that. It's like, hey, don't eat out lunch twice this year, and you can pay for these memberships. Go eat your bologna sandwich and. Or whatever it is, and you can really start to make a difference. And these organizations will tell you, you do make a difference. It's not even just the money you put in. Every member they have helps them and their sponsorships. That's where they get a lot of their money, is the corporate money. So this bigger an RMEF or a Ducks Unlimited can grow, the more money they're going to raise through sponsorships. You know, all this stuff's connected. So I'm a big believer in, you know, choosing a few organizations that are near and dear to your heart. Or I just joined a couple years ago. I'd never even duck hunted before. And I was like, I'm going to join Ducks Unlimited because I know they do great work. And, you know, I think choosing whatever it is, just pick one, pick five, put some money into it. And that's a great way to impact.
Yep. I'm with you. I try to do as much as I can. Hell, I think I probably have 10 groups that I'm part of, but it's
me too. My wife keeps complaining because the magazines just keep piling up, and I get more magazines than I even have time to read.
I don't think I ever open them up.
But dude, they're really great when you actually start digging through them. It's just timing is always my thing.
Exactly, time is a commodity that I'd rather give more money than than lose more time. But yeah. Awesome, man. I like what you guys are doing. I'm happy to hear that things are going well for you. I think more and more people should start jumping ship and coming over to, you know, a platform like yours. I think it's just going to help us out in the long run.
Yeah. Well, you know, go ahead.
Sorry.
Now you go ahead, and I'm going to add on a bonus reason to that, because I think a lot of people think of us as like you have to pick Instagram or go wild, and it's not necessarily that. I'll give my spiel. Go ahead and finish your thought, though.
Well, I mean, it's not that I want everybody to go back into the dark ages, and this is also something I've heard myself say like three or four times. I remember back when in the early 80s when I did my hunter safety instructor told us, you know, don't flaunt your game. Don't, you know, strap it to the hood of the car. Be very respectful. Don't, you know, you don't want to piss off somebody who's a non-hunter. And, you know, that it worked for the time. It was easier to control things, and it's not as easy to control things nowadays. As we talked in the beginning, you know, it's very easy to put something up there that was intended for the hunting public, and it gets out to the non-hunting public, and it gets out in a negative way. But it's again, not that I want you guys to go back into the dark ages and hide what you're doing. But at the same time, if you don't think you're capable of policing yourself and being or looking at things like how you had mentioned, you know, stepping out and looking, seeing, can this end up on CNN or whatever? I think a hunting specific platform, or a outdoorsman specific platforms are smarter. You know, I think it's just easier. You're going to be, you know, judged less and so on and so forth. That's all.
You're probably going to learn. That's what a lot of people don't realize. Even if you've been doing this for 20 years, we've got people on our platform that you know are life learners and are willing to help, or you can come in and help. You know, I talk about getting involved in a group. If you don't have a group in your area, Go Wild's a great place to go, because, you know, I see people all the time. Today, I've already been in multiple threads today of people getting help and getting feedback. And, dude, I grew up a rifle and shotgun hunter. I never shot a bow really until last year. I learned to shoot archery through this community. I've been getting feedback from people, like a lot of really, like from Scotland, from Wisconsin, from California. Like I'm getting feedback from all over the country, and it's enabling in a time when bow shops are closing up left and right. This is a really great place to go and get feedback really quickly on the archery following. You know, if I were to, the thing I was going to say a second ago, of, you know, you can look at it as like a safe place, and it is that it, you have context, and that's with anything, man. Like, gosh, we haven't talked about it, and this is a more hunting oriented podcast, but like trout fishermen get beat to death too. Fly fishermen. I mean, there's a lot of controversy bubbling up in fishing these days. This is a place where you can go, and there's context, and people understand it, and they understand your passion, and they're going to connect with you immediately on a deeper level than you may have connected with anybody on your other accounts. But beyond that, we offer a lot more than just as a posting system. You know, you can one of the first differences is you're going to post into a forum. So if you're into elk hunting, you're going to immediately post into a forum, and your post is going to go to everybody that sees that. And there's a chance that they can interact with it. The second thing is you don't have to have a photo. We don't care about your photos as much as your story. So right. A lot of times, you know, Instagram makes you have this visual representation, and the whole platform's curated around really fast-paced, visually pleasing content. That's why they have filters. We don't have filters. I understand that your photos are going to be more raw, and we're not trying to pretty those up. We're looking for your story. So out of the gate, you can share links. So if you got your own YouTube channels or your podcast, you can share links directly. There's none of that crap with the captions where you can't share that stuff. Those are a few things at the surface level that make us different. But also, I mentioned the activity tracking. You can track your mileage, your elevation change. If you've got a Garmin, we've built two apps for Garmin so far, and you can sync up any of your Garmin Connect IQ accounts to Go Wild, and you can track your heart rate over top of this. So when you go mule deer hunting, if you see a buck walk out and your heart rate shoots up, instead of just coming back and telling your buddy, hey man, my heart was racing so hard I didn't think I'd be able to make that shot, you can now say, dude, I went from like a resting 73 beats per minute to 130 beats per minute and I still made the shot. You can actually get this data, right, that you're leaving out in the field right now, your miles hiked, all this stuff. Like I'm addicted to it now, and that, like, I feel like I have to log everything through my Go Wild account. And today, where we are, it's individual activity. You're getting that feedback. But we're in the process of rolling out some accounts adjustments that show how much time you're spending outside. So we're able to help you track, like, what you're doing for the year. And where we're going with this is eventually we'll be able to help the community and say, hey, you know, we know you like to go deer hunting, but you haven't scouted at all this year. And typically people that scout three times or more each year are 37% more likely to kill a deer. Like, right, we'll be able to give you those kind of prompts and feedback. Yeah, that's where it's all going, man. So, like, it's not just a photo sharing place. The other thing is, and to me, like, just as a guy that likes free stuff, this is one of the coolest things, is the free giveaways that we do every single week. We are working with First Light. We've given away, a few weeks ago, we gave away $500 of the First Light gear. It was a gift card. You can pick whatever you want. We've got another ginormous opportunity with First Light. I think it's the biggest thing we've ever done. So that should be live by the time this podcast goes live. So make sure your people check out Go Wild for that. It involves even more free First Light gear, and there's a free hunt involved. That's all I'm going to say, but it is with I'll add a teaser. It is in with some of First Light's brand ambassadors, so you guys know that those are high-quality hunters themselves. So you can come in. Every week we have a big chance at something like that. Cool. We've given away coolers. We've given away – I did a hunt, free hunt with Jeremiah Dowdy. Last year, I went, and we came down and flew into Texas to go with a person that won. It ended up being a veteran, which was awesome. Nice. This guy had just gotten out of the Army, and he got to come back and get a free deer hunt and go learn to cook with Jeremiah Dowdy. We did free turkey hunts this year. We did two free turkey hunts through National Wild Turkey Federation. We've done fly rods. Dude, it's like every week I get people messaging us, like, where do you guys – like, this is insane. Most – you see Instagram giveaways for, like, T-shirts and hats and coolers, yeah, but like, yeah, we're doing literally $500 to $800 value stuff all the time. So the free giveaways are awesome. The activity tracking is great. Connecting with like-minded people is special. And there's so much more to it, but like, if I were to hit a few quick things that you can do that I think your audience would be really into, that's it right there.
Sweet. Well, awesome, man. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing time with us and talking about some of the issues here and tell us about the app.
Yeah.
So if listeners want to get the app, they just go to App Store,
Yeah, you can look it up. It should pop up. If you don't see it, just go to downloadgowild.com, and it'll take you straight to the download page. You can just tap your link if you're iOS or Android, or it'll link you to our Garmin apps too. But yeah, that'll take you straight to the app stores from there. Or again, just search for it. It's one word, Go Wild, one word.
Now, is that something? Do you have a web app too? Can you use it on your PC or?
No, we don't yet. We are looking into that, is what I'll say. But we honestly, man, we're young. We launched fully live last March on Android and iOS. We had a beta that ran on iOS for about 6 months before that. But so we're 16 months into this thing, so we're still a baby. And I always tell people, look, we got to First Light, we got to Garmin and National Wild Turkey Federation, and our first 16 months have been live. Just imagine what the next 16 months are going to do.
That's awesome.
I mean, I always tell people, what you download and see today, that's about 40% of what we have planned for the next year. We're moving very fast. We evolve and update faster than any of our competitors that I'm aware of. So I think people will continue to see that we're there. You're going to get emails from me. You're going to get a direct message from me when you sign up, checking to see if things are going well. And when you respond to those go to me. Those go to my co-founders who also reach out to people and just see how things are going. All of that is our actual team responding to you. I guarantee it's going to be an immersive experience like nobody's ever dealt with on an app. Mark Zuckerberg is not personally reaching out to people. You know, any of our competitors are not personally reaching out to you to see how you're doing, what ideas you have. A lot of people have been shocked to see, hey, what if you did this on activity tracking and we have it implemented within a week? You know, we listen to our users and we want feedback. So I encourage people to reach out and tell us what they want to see.
Awesome, man. Well, go check it out, guys. Go Wild app. I'm on there. So for sure that means you have to be on there. just playing. But no, seriously, go check it out. And Brad, I want to thank you for coming on, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.